Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we have Colonel Douglas McGregor with some chilling news out of Ukraine. Wait till you hear about this. It's pretty incredible. And then Dr. Mark McDonald in a few segments that are being responded to unbelievably favorably. I think you're really going to enjoy it. So email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support the Charlie Kirk Show, go to charliekirk.com/support. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved today with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Get engaged, get involved, start a high school chapter, start a college chapter today at tpusa.com. Come to our Student Action Summit at tpusa.com/SAS. We have Kaylee McEnany, Ted Cruz, Laura Ingram, Josh Hawley, Greg Gutfeld, Donald Trump Jr., Kimberly Guilfoyle, Kat Timpf, Pete Hegseth, Byron Donalds, Ben Carson, Rick Scott, Lauren Boebert, Kevin Stitt, Governor of Oklahoma, Kat Kamick, Matt Gaetz, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, Dave Rubin, Victor Marks, Sean Foyt, and three pastors, Mark Burns, Samuel Duth, and Pastor David Engelhart. That's tpusa.com/SAS. If you are maybe feeling depressed or anxious, you're probably staring at your screen too much, and you should use whatever money you have, come to Tampa, Florida, and make something out of your life. Immerse yourself with people who share your values. Meet new people. Turn off that stupid little silly smartphone and start to flourish. Turning Point USA Student Action Summit is for people of all ages, June 22, 23, 24. It's tpusa.com/SAS. Running out of time. It's in about 2 weeks. tpusa.com/SAS. Turning Point Action will be hosting Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. People's lives are changed at our Student Action Summit every single year. tpusa.com/SAS. And as always, email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Early on, we tried to warn people that the West getting involved in the Russian-Ukrainian war, Putin's invasion of Ukraine, would be a mistake. We condemned the invasion from a moral standpoint. But we said that this will only cost more lives, that this could have been solved if Zelensky would have allowed elections to occur in the eastern part of Ukraine and allowing those provinces, those territories to be part of Russia. But where are we today? $56 billion that we know of have been appropriated towards this. We don't even know where the money's been spent. And unfortunately, it seems as if Putin says he's only getting started. Well, with us to help unpack this is someone who has been a very clear and courageous voice since the very beginning of this conflict. It is Colonel McGregor. Colonel, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Charlie.
So, Colonel, let me ask this question. What is the current state of affairs on the ground in Ukraine? Because it's very murky if you just read Western press. And then secondly, is it true that Putin is only getting started in Ukraine?
Well, let's answer the first one first. He currently controls, I would argue, all of the traditional Russian areas that are inhabited or populated with the Russian speakers, as you pointed out earlier. This is the area that if you'd held a plebiscite back in 2014 would have undoubtedly voted to join Russia or voted for some form of independence. So from Putin's standpoint, he's largely achieved his aims. The only two objectives that remain are Kharkov up in the north, which is historically a Russian city, and Odessa in the south, which is historically Russian. Now, the reason I say he plans to ultimately take those two as the totality of his interest is that he is largely withdrawn about 70 to 80% of Russian army combat forces. the forces on the ground that are effectively mopping up Ukrainian forces are, for the most part, Russian separatists from the two autonomous republics that had already tried to break away from Kiev and were subsequently recognized this year by Moscow as independent. Chechen forces and, frankly, some mercenary forces backed by huge quantities of Russian artillery and using old Russian tanks as assault guns to finish off bunkers and fixed fortifications on the ground. So the war, with the exception of Kharkov and Odessa, as far as the Russians are concerned, is largely over. There is no intention to do anything else because the Russians don't have a very large army, Charlie. They've got a very limited armed force, and that's by design. They didn't want to build a huge army. They certainly are not in a position to threaten NATO, nor would they unless they were directly attacked by us.
And so where it gets confusing for a lot of people in the West is that if you just listen to what Washington, D.C. says, it sounds like Putin is just beginning his grand Napoleonic or Hitlerian march across Europe. But when you break free of kind of that propaganda, we recognize and realize that this seems as if to be more kind of a family conflict that he wants very specific parts of Ukraine. Is it true that 80% of Ukraine's military has been destroyed? And also, why is it that Washington, D.C. wants us to get more involved with this conflict, given the facts that you just presented?
Well, the force that was in the field when the war started, this was the standing army of the Ukrainian state, which we had poured billions into to equip, to train, and to prepare for offensive operations, frankly, against the two autonomous republics and then eventually Crimea. 80% of that force is destroyed. And 80% of the soldiers that were part of that force are either dead or wounded. So that's a very serious condition for the Ukrainian armed forces. What the Ukrainians are relying on right now are what we would call the equivalent of reservists and National Guardsmen, and in many cases, just civilians pressed into service. So that I think, is the first answer that you need. The second part is that, you know, this nonsense that Putin wants to conquer all of Ukraine was never true. All he ever did in the Minsk agreements was ask that Russian speakers, Russian citizens inside Ukraine, be treated equally before the law, that they not be penalized for being Russians, that they not be forced to adopt Ukrainian language. Obviously, they could speak Ukrainian in official capacity, but they wanted to be Russians, and he wanted them to have equal rights. That was one of the keystones in the edifice of Minsk. It was never fulfilled. That I think, is widely misunderstood. So the last thing that Putin wants is to go west of that Dnieper River and end up incorporating 20 million, 25 million Ukrainians into Russia. He knows they don't want to be part of Russia. That's never been his aim. But in addition to that, we need to understand that Eastern Ukraine was always viewed by us as a springboard for attack on Russia. We were the ones that cultivated hostility in Ukraine against Russia. We built a force inside Ukraine that was fundamentally anti-Russian and hostile to Russia. That force was the vanguard, frankly, for larger NATO presence in Eastern Ukraine. Well, Eastern Ukraine is in missile flight terms, only minutes from Russia's National Nuclear Deterrent Force. Putin was never going to tolerate that, and he made that clear over the last 15 years over and over and over again. Had we listened and simply adopted this notion that neutrality could be acceptable, and Ukraine would have profited enormously from that, I think you'd still see the Ukrainian state largely intact. That opportunity is lost now. The territory the Russians control, they will not give up.
And one of the arguments that is made by the West is that we can't allow Putin to neighbor a NATO country, which you look at a map, though, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but there is a million-person military base city, Kaliningrad Oblast, which does border Poland, that is controlled by Russian forces. And so that just completely obliterates their argument. There's already Russian forces on the NATO border. And when you present that to a politician, they say, oh, well, that's more complicated than that. Well, really isn't, because your argument has already fallen apart of your big deterrent. Let me ask a very simple question. Where the heck has $56 billion gone?
That's a good question. And the Pentagon has finally sent people to Ukraine to find out, because we know that weapons have already turned up in northern Iraq in the hands of Kurdish fighters, yep, because the Turks have turned them over to us. We know that there's an arms bazaar in Kosovo, which is essentially a boiling pot of Islamist terrorism and criminality, and also in Albania. So that we're going to see all sorts of American-made weapons and capabilities show up in many, many places where they were never destined to go. And I think it's too late to really answer your question.
Too late to answer where $56 billion goes. And I'm going to make a political point here, which is people are suffering tremendously right now in America. And what you just articulated is it's a mystery that we send $56 billion urgently while we have 7,000 people that cross into our border illegally every single day, anywhere between 5,000 to 7,000. People can't afford groceries. They can't afford fuel. But we send $56 billion, and we don't quite know where all that money went. But based on your analysis, which is very helpful, and we know this happens, obviously Rand Paul has warned about this for years, when you oversupply a theater with weapons that you think is going to the good guys, don't be surprised 6 to 9 months later that your bitter enemies have those very same weapons. Don't be shocked.
Oh, absolutely. You're spot on, Charlie. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Colonel, stay right there. We have one more segment with you. It's Colonel Douglas McGregor, who is one of the only sane voices on this Ukraine situation. I have seen more just outrageous one-line propaganda from senators and congressmen in the last couple months that are just trying to get us deeper and deeper into a conflict where victory is not attainable. They can't even tell you what victory is. So, have you noticed that it's becoming more expensive to take care of your overall health? That's why I love my friends over at Centurion Labs and what they're doing. They have combined vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, copper, and quercetin in just one pill to save you money. It's called Centurion Defender, and it defends your immune system against allergies, colds, flu, and the coronavirus. Who knows when the next wave will hit and you want your immune system to be prepared? All you have to do is take one Defender with breakfast and one Defender with dinner and keep living your life. Now is the time to defend your health, save money, and support a company that shares your Christian values and loves this country. Check out Centurion's website, where you have all kinds of health supplements. Whether you are struggling to get pregnant, desire a healthy pregnancy, need a cough medicine to get you back to work, wish to have an energy drink that is actually healthy for you, or you want to defend your overall health, Centurion can help. They have dedicated the last 15 years to research to develop safe, effective, and affordable products in America that you can trust. Give for a limited time, Kirk listeners get 20% off their first order of Defender when you go to CenturionLabs.com/Kirk and use promo code Kirk. That's CenturionLabs.com/Kirk and get promo code Kirk. CenturionLabs.com/Kirk, promo code Kirk. Check it out today. Colonel, I want to play Cut 72. It reinforces something you said, where the West was the one that was pushing towards the border of Russia. This is Lindsey Graham and John McCain, and Lindsey Graham giving a rather enthusiastic speech saying, we're going to take the fight to Putin. We're going to go straight to the border. We're going to play offense. Play Cut 72.
Your fight is our fight. 2017 will be the year of offense. All of us will go back to Washington, and we will push the case against Russia. Enough of a Russian aggression. It is time for them to pay a heavier price.
Charles, I believe you will win. I am convinced you will win, and we will do everything we can to provide you with what you need to win.
Colonel, your reaction.
Well, this was very dangerous, obviously, and they had a receptive audience, unfortunately, in Ukraine, given its tragic history. And I think this actually has its roots in the 1990s in Bosnia-Herzegovina and then subsequently in Kosovo and the attacks that we launched against the Serbs, which were aimed ultimately to eject Russia for all intents and purposes from the Balkans and Europe, to marginalize Russia. Russia was weak, we were strong, and we made no secret of our desire to marginalize them as a power. All of this is connected, and it's unnecessary. I couldn't understand why we even continued to maintain forces in Europe once the wall came down, because there was no threat from Russia. And frankly, today there isn't one. When the president of Finland was asked why he wanted to join NATO, he made it very clear that he didn't feel threatened by Russia in the least. I don't think that's the case with anybody right now in Europe that truly understands contemporary Russia. It has nothing to do with the Soviet Union. There is no threat there. So you asked earlier, why? Why are we doing this? Frankly, it's incomprehensible to me. But there is this ideology of forced democratization, I guess, that is the easiest explanation, that is aimed at destroying this Russian national Orthodox Christian state.
That's a great way to put it, forced democratization, because if you were to talk to a majority of senators in both parties, by the way, they would say this is the recreation of the Soviet Union, this is our greatest enemy, this is a major threat. And so, Colonel, we don't know where the $56 billion has gone, but we do know that Zelensky and his family has just purchased a massive mansion in Florence, Italy, that would be tens of millions of dollars, Florence, Italy, being a far away from Kyiv. Can you talk a little bit about how, no matter what, Zelensky is going to kind of become the darling of the neoconservative West? Doesn't matter how much money we've spent or where it's gone, but it seems as if every time people at the top levels of these regimes we prop up, they do just fine, and the U.S. taxpayers are on the hook.
Well, I think we're on the hook to an extent, but there are also oligarchs involved. You know, we're always talking about oligarchs in Russia. Well, there are oligarchs here in the United States, people who are billionaires, people who live virtually all over the world in numerous places at any given point in time. And they are also helping to fund the effort to effectively fight this war to the last Ukrainian. And yes, once it becomes clear that Zelensky's utility is at an end and Ukraine is utterly devastated, I'm sure that Mr. Zelensky will be transported somewhere else. I'm told that he also owns a mansion outside of Miami.
That's right. I've heard exactly the same thing. Well, Colonel, thank you for your leadership. It's too bad that our leaders have been so hoodwinked by this entire deal, and now Zelensky wants $750 billion to rebuild his country. Is that all? I mean, just round it up to a trillion, man. I mean, come on. Colonel, thank you so much.
Thank you for all that you do, Charlie. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're going to stay on this story. Thank you. Hey, everybody. This Common Sense is brought to you by the folks at SecondVote.com. Amazing people who are fighting back against woke corporations. Subscribe now at SecondVote.com, promo code Charlie.
Good afternoon. I'm Rebecca Hatfield, president of Second Vote. We've had uniquely American common sense since 1776, but now we're in the age of common nonsense. Today's nonsense comes from the pro-abortion extremists protesting outside the home of Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett. They were wearing clothes covered in fake blood and holding baby dolls. It's not just nonsense. It's downright disgusting and illegal if they hope to persuade Justice Barrett. But woke corporations are getting ready to use the dollars you spend to fund these extremists if the Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade. If you shop at places like Starbucks and Target, you can be sure they are giving your money to Planned Parenthood. So is it any wonder the new Gallup poll shows that the record-breaking 50% of Americans say that the U.S. has poor moral values? The poll also showed that the number of Americans who believe in God is at a historic low. Common sense tells us that these things are connected. The lies pushed by big tech, woke corporations, and our far-left government have begun to erode the morals and values of Americans by contradicting and assaulting what we know to be truth. They censor conservative voices and push views inconsistent with the long-held religious beliefs and eternal truth. That's why Second Vote is helping you to push back. At Second Vote, we do the research to expose big corporations by scoring hundreds of companies on traditional American and Judeo-Christian values. And Second Vote has been around for 10 years with the mission of empowering you with the research to make better choices with your money. So please make sure to arm yourselves every day with the knowledge you need to shop smart and stop funding the left. All the research you need is available at SecondVote.com. I'm Rebecca Hatfield, president of Second Vote, reminding you that your first vote is at the ballot box, but your second vote is with your wallet.
Make sure you go to SecondVote.com and subscribe now using promo code Charlie for just $40 for a whole year. That's SecondVote.com, promo code Charlie. We have the best listeners. Janet emailed me. I find it so interesting that none of these globalist leaders, Merkel, Macron, May, Johnson, have children. So interesting. I didn't know that. I think that emphasizes something these globalists, communists, and socialists always miss about human nature. No man will ever work as hard for the state as he will for his family and himself. That is so smart. From Applegate, Michigan, I did not know Merkel, Macron, May, and Johnson had no kids. And neither does Lindsey Graham. There's something deeply troubling happening in America. We have the most depressed, suicidal, alcohol-addicted generation in history. Why is this happening? Did we do this to ourselves? Well, with us to help unpack and explore that topic, and we don't have enough time to do it, but enough to get started, is a great American patriot, Dr. Mark McDonald. Doctor, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back, Charlie.
So, Doctor, let me ask you, from a psychological perspective, a lot of parents are wondering, now that the lockdowns are over and their kids are back into the flow, why are they now more depressed than ever? What's your answer to that?
Well, my answer to that is, you know, I've been seeing children for 10, 12 years now in private practice. And in the last 2.5, I have never, ever seen such a rapid, precipitous decline in mental health, anxiety, depression, suicidality. Two children in my practice died during the lockdowns, both from fentanyl overdoses in their homes. I also see incredibly huge, rapid increases in drug use, especially marijuana, which, as anyone who's been listening to the news lately has heard, is finally now starting to get its due as a cause of significant psychotic breaks and executive functioning problems in young people. It should have happened years ago, and finally it's now being heard. The reason why we still have problems, even after these lockdowns are over, is that we haven't actually addressed the fundamental problem and the cause of this mental health collapse. And in my view, it has a lot to do with alienation, particularly young men and young boys. We have not supported, strengthened, and encouraged boys to become men, to explore, to grow, to challenge, to accomplish. We have essentially been telling them now for years and years that they are the cause of every problem in society, that they are rapists, that they are misogynists, that they're the patriarchy. And so what you see, and you saw this just a few days ago on the July 4th shooting, is you see a very disturbed young man. You can tell just by looking at his face, his hair, his gaunt expression. He's confused. He's wearing a skirt. He wants to be a transgendered girl. These boys don't have a place. They don't have a sense of purpose. They don't understand what their identity or their meaning is. And so they're leaving now this lockdown period where they've been sitting in front of screens, playing games and watching porn, not going to school, not being tested with reality. And they are completely at a loss. This is not going to get better. It's not going to improve until we actually start to address the fundamental problem, lack of fathers, acceptance of marijuana use in young people, pushing transgender ideology, the attacks on masculinity. I mean, I could go on and on. There's a lot of sub-causes of this, but the root cause is not supporting the growth of young men. And of course, this affects girls too, because when you have a weak generation of young men, you wind up with girls who don't have a place. They don't express their femininity. Yes. They don't know how to connect with men. They're alone, and they have no purpose of getting married and having children. I mean, these are not that complicated issues, but they're very, very profound.
And they think they have to become men or they become lesbians or whatever.
Correct.
So, doctor, let me ask you about one thing in particular. Let's talk about the transgender thing. So some parents believe that if they bring their kid to a therapist, the therapist must affirm them. Can you talk about that from a clinical standpoint? Because I always, from my limited understanding, it's actually a therapist should try to challenge you where necessary and to try to make you grow and become a stronger person. Can you help us through that?
Well, you're completely correct in that, Charlie. It is actually unethical to, as they say, affirm somebody's transgendered ideology identity. This is a political position. This is not a therapeutic one. And unfortunately, it's being forced and foisted upon clinicians by state medical boards, including in California and other states, where if you do not affirm as a therapist, you can have your license sanctioned or revoked. And I know some therapists who have lost their licenses because they have explicitly challenged the child's transgendered identity. I had two girls in my practice a few years ago who were suffering from Munchausen's by proxy, meaning that their mother was actually abusing them physically and making them sick in order to gratify her own sick mental illness, really. One of the girls, after 2 or 3 years of suffering, came to me and said, "Doctor, I finally figured out why I'm having so many problems." This is before the pandemic, by the way. And I said, what is it? She said, I'm actually a boy. And I paused for a moment. I took a breath and I said, with all sincerity and compassion, I said, you may want to rethink that. You're not a boy. You're confused. You're suffering in a very, very difficult household with a very disturbed mother. Your group therapist, who happened to be a young woman, an adolescent therapist, put that idea into her mind, affirmed it, and then reinforced it as the solution to all of her problems. She looked at me, her face dropped, she walked out of the room. I never saw her again. I have no idea what happened to her. I don't even know if she's alive. This is happening all over the country today. This was literally 3 or 4 years ago. This is now happening daily to most therapists in the United States, and they are at a loss as to what to do, even if they want to do the right thing, because they are at risk of losing their professional reputations and their actual practice to do therapy or to prescribe medications if they're a psychiatrist, if they do not comply with this political intrusion into medical mental health therapy.
I think that's such a smart point. And this is my only concern when, you know, some people say we need more mental health funding and treatment. I totally agree. But I know that there's kind of a divide in the therapist community and in the psychiatrist and psychologist community of there's some people that affirm the issue for a 9, 10, 11-year-old that actually will do incredible disservice for them long term. Is there something deeper going on here? Because in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, I believe there was still a commitment in the American psychological community, for lack of a better term, of absolute or objective truth, or at least a standard you wanted to go towards. With the spread of subjectivism, a therapist might say, well, who am I to say what's best for you? Who am I to say that if you want to starve yourself, maybe that's your truth. Maybe you want to be skin and bones. And isn't it a therapist's job to know what is good and bring a patient towards that?
It is. What you're describing, Charlie, is what I call a kind of postmodernist philosophy,
yes,
which is born of leftism, but it's more than just leftism. It's not just an economic or racial battle. This is actually a philosophical battle for living in reality and truth, or living in complete and utter subjectivity. And when you infuse narcissism into it, isolation, as well as this kind of post-decadent culture that we have, where we've lost our sense of meaning and challenge and purpose, so we haven't been fighting in wars, we haven't had to search for water or food for a long time, we just ordered on an app. You have a hot mix that is leading to this explosion in acceptance of subjective truth, which is stupid. It's an oxymoron. There is no my truth, your truth, Charlie. You have your experience. I have my experience. You have your opinion. I have my opinion. Truth exists externally. It exists outside of us. We try to approximate it through science and in the application of wisdom. We never get fully there, but that's our goal. Our compass is to search for the external truth. That is no longer the case in medicine. The AMA last year put out a public policy position that they were no longer in support of placing M or F, male or female, on birth certificates. They want an X. Same on passports. The American Academy of Pediatrics is actively supporting the chemical castration of boys and girls pre-puberty in order to affirm their transgender subjective truth. This is not only a failure of medicine and the protection against political intrusion. This is a failure of basic reality testing. This fundamentally, in my view, goes to good versus evil. And subjective truth is really an evil, evil ideology. Yes. And it's killing our children. If we don't fight back, if the 80% of therapists who have gone woke don't wake up from this, they are going to be actually destroying the next generation.
No, I know they are,
though. Rather than treating them.
I mean, and it depends on the clinician. And, you know, you do a wonderful job. And I know many others that do. But I have seen therapists do incredible damage to people. Like serious damage. Is that fair to say?
It is completely fair. I would even say, Charlie, that as I just said, approximately 80% of the therapists are woke and or incompetent. I have tossed 80% of my Rolodex cards in the trash in the last 24 months after discovering that I can no longer trust that therapist to honor his or her ethical obligations. And I don't think that's an exaggeration.
And when you say woke, do you mean the same themes we're talking about? Subjectivism, affirming of what is an obvious, you know, mental condition. Is that what you mean by woke in your world?
I mean, taking in this postmodern, leftist, subjective, philosophical position and putting it in to your practice, abdicating your responsibility as a caring yet objective bystander who intervenes when needed to assist somebody who is suffering from confusion and difficulty with thinking. You cannot take a small child, a three-year-old, as a parent and say, you know, he's confused about what he wants to eat, but we're going to honor his truth and give him ice cream, cake, and pizza.
That's such a good point.
You don't do that. Therapists are supposed to be somewhat paternalistic. That's not a bad thing, because the people who are coming to you are not clients. You're not a hairdresser. You're not an attorney. You are a doctor. Charlie, I do not have clients. I have patients. And whenever I hear a therapist say, I had another client today, I cringe. Oh, and I say, what are you?
Smart point.
A beautician?
Yes, that's exactly right. Like, how do I want my hair done?
What is this?
Yes.
You never heard the word client until about 8 or 9 years ago.
Wow.
And it happened because the social work dogma, and social workers are all left-wing loons, they're indoctrinated in the social work academies to be that way, took over mental health and medicine. There are people now running the entire psychiatric child psychiatry department in Los Angeles County who have degrees in social work. The LA County Public Board of Health Director in Los Angeles, Barbara Farrar, she's a social worker too. These are not medical doctors, and they have jumped in, they have impregnated themselves into the medical establishment with their political ideology, their social activism, and they have turned the profession of medicine, which is patient doctor, into provider client.
When someone says, well, Charlie, we need to honor somebody's feelings, I say, okay, let's play a thought experiment. Should we give liposuction to someone who has anorexia? They want it. They feel they're fat. Come on, give them liposuction. No, we know that's bad for them, actually. We know that that could kill them. And it is the clinician's job, the expert's job, to know what is good and desirable and to see a problem and to guide them towards some sort of a fulfilling life or at least improvement in their conditions. Not saying, hey, it's actually you're perfect right where you are. It actually creates more mental health problems and more chaos and more misery. So you're also the author of The United States of Fear. I want to make sure I plug that for our audience. It's a terrific book, United States of Fear. Tell us about your book really quickly.
I published United States of Fear back in November, Charlie, as a synopsis to explain the antecedents of where we had come from and come to as a nation in a state of decline and collapse during the pandemic. And I traced the cultural antecedents, which didn't start just in March of 2020. They started decades ago with the attacks on masculinity, the degradation of the feminist movement, the attacks on children and families and church, et cetera. And from there, I explained how all of this generated a tremendous degree of fear. And fear is such a paralyzing and incapacitating state to be in. I see it in my patients who have PTSD and stress disorders, rape victims, trauma victims. They cannot think. And so we as Americans began to look towards a savior, a father figure, the federal government, as a person to bail us out of this crisis and assuage our fear. And in doing so, we gave up tremendous, tremendous amounts of liberty, more than we have in the last 300 years since the founding of the country. Since then, I have written a second book, which will be out in about 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully. It's in production right now, called Freedom from Fear, which is focused specifically on how we get out of this predicament. We're already out of this pandemic. This medical pandemic ended a lot earlier than everyone actually gave it credit for. But the fear pandemic is still among us. People are still running around wearing masks by themselves, outdoors, in their cars, on scooters. People are still not eating in restaurants because they're afraid that they're going to get sick. We still can't travel freely in many parts of the world and in certain parts of the United States. Fear is still gripping us. And if we can fight back against this fear, which is truly an addiction, one of the greatest addictions that I've seen in my history of treatment, much worse really than drugs. If we can succeed in fighting the pandemic of fear and overcoming the addiction, then we can start to think rationally, think for ourselves, and take back our freedom.
United States of Fear. Everyone check out a copy of that. Look, over the years, you've probably tried different investments in stocks and mutual funds. So now you know they could be up or down or all over the place. But with inflation running at 8.5%, probably even higher than that, the highest rate for 40 years. Do you need uncertainty? Being able to sleep at night knowing your investments aren't about to crash is worth its weight in gold. And speaking of gold, if you've been jumping from one investment idea to the next, a gold IRA with Noble Gold is perfect. With gold, you'll shield your gains from taxes, you'll keep the real value of your wealth, you'll own a global asset, something tangible, and you'll protect your wealth against an economic crash. What is not to like? And this month, for every cash deal above $20,000, you get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. You can't go wrong with Noble Gold. Call 877-646-5347 now to find out more at noblegoldinvestments.com. They're a phenomenal company. I really think highly of them. noblegoldinvestments.com. Own things you can touch at noblegoldinvestments.com. Dr. McDonald, there's a lot of parents that listen to this program, a lot of grandparents, and they're not sure what to do. And listening to our earlier conversation, they're even more confused about what to do about their kids and their grandkids, because they're worried that if they go to the wrong therapist, it could do more harm than good. So therapy and that aside, what can parents do naturopathically, homeopathically, or just out of changes of how their home works or how they spend their time or how they discipline? What can be done to fix the most depressed, suicidal, alcohol addicted generation in history?
I just got back from the Balkans, and what I noticed in the Balkans was something specifically very different than what I experienced in the United States. And that is I'm trying to think of the word. It's more like a magnetic, not genetic, but magnetic draw towards connections with others.
Yes.
Not towards fitness and going on boot camps and checking into TikTok and Instagram and tuning out on Netflix at night, which is what everyone in the United States wants to do. No, they don't care about that stuff. They wake up thinking, who am I going to meet for coffee? Whose hand am I going to shake? Who am I going to sit down and have a beer with?
You're talking about Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia, and Albania, that area, right?
Correct, as well as Northern Montenegro and Kosovo and several of the
very relational focused
Yugoslav republics.
That's right. Yeah.
100% more than I've ever seen anywhere in the world. It struck me because of its absence here in the U.S.
Yes.
And I think, and I said at the very beginning, at the outset of this conversation, I use the word alienation. There is an alienation among our young people, particularly young men, but the consequence obviously extends to young girls as well, which is at the root of this malaise. Anything that a grandparent can do to help to reinforce socialization, face-to-face exchange with other human beings, especially peers and healthy peers, peers who are homeschooled, peers who are in sports, peers who are socially well-adjusted, can really help to mitigate the harm. Because we're swimming in a cesspool right now. Every kid's got a cell phone. Every kid's got access to Xanax on delivery. Every kid has access to porn. You can't really stop that unless you go and kidnap your child and put them in a village like M. Night Shyamalan's film out in the middle of nowhere. But you can counter some of those forces by encouraging as much social, healthy socialization as possible. And that is really what grandparents can do, because they have a lot of time. They have a lot of access to resources that parents don't. That's one of the best things that grandparents can do to help their
children.
And
they should have more energy, because the short time they get to spend with them, meaning like I don't have to worry about, you know, getting them to sleep and all that. It's like I got 2 good hours and I could really pour into them. 2 minutes remaining. You mentioned something a couple times here that I want to zero in on. And parents, quite honestly, they have no idea how bad this is and the chemical damage it can do to one's brain. Pornography. How widespread is it? And what is the damage it's doing to our nation's young people, men, but also young ladies as well?
It's everywhere. You can't stop it. And it is utterly destructive. And it's destructive for chemical reasons, because it creates a dopamine rush of addiction towards immediate gratification. And second, psychologically, and even more importantly, it redefines the relationship between you and the other as one where you are receiving and you are not giving. The other person becomes an object as opposed to a partner. It is, just as I said earlier, anti-reality, because porn is not real. Porn is not real love. Porn is not real sex. And if you stay on that path, you will then lose chemically the ability to have normal, healthy sexual drives with women if you're a man. And secondly, you will lose the capacity to interact in a healthy way with a woman and to see her as a partner rather than as somebody who is there to service and pleasure you.
Do you believe the increase in anxiety and depression has something to do with the amount of pornography being consumed by our nation's young people?
I do. I think anything that's coming out of smartphones and computers, whether it's likes, hearts, eggplants, flashes of breasts, body parts, anything that gives immediate gratification, whether it's benign like a heart or seriously ill like a BDSM sex scene, anything that does that and is immediately accessible to a person through a pocket device, through a computer, is going to increase anxiety and depression because it's going to cause an artificial elevation and then collapse of one's mood because it is not based in reality. It's like stuffing yourself with ice cream and pizza rather than eating a healthy, balanced meal every day.
Dr. Mark McDonald, thank you so much for joining us. We'll have to have you on again soon when your new book comes out. But everyone, get a copy of The United States of Fear today. Phenomenal commentary. The emails are just coming in. Someone just emailed us. Mark McDonald just blew my mind. So the response is very favorable so far. Doctor, thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.